Hello, and you are listening to EcoJustice Radio from the KPFK Los Angeles studio, a project of SoCal 350 Climate Action. Our show presents environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. My name is Jessica Aldridge, and today's host, Carrie Kim, will speak to public preparedness from the threats of refineries, ports, and freeways. Her guest today is Jesse N. Marquez, the executive director of the environmental justice organization, the Coalition for a Safe Environment. The coalition was established in 2001 in Wilmington, California, to eliminate, reduce, and mitigate the negative community, environmental, public health, public safety, and socioeconomic impacts caused by the international trade, marine, ports, freight transportation corridors, petroleum, and energy industries. Aloha. Thank you for tuning in. My name is Carrie Kim. We're here with Jesse Marquez, founder and executive director of the Coalition for a Safe Environment, an environmental justice nonprofit organization which was founded in 2001 in Wilmington, California. Thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, Jesse. We thank you for your longstanding commitment to environmental justice and the future of our children and the planet.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here to share information with you.
So, there's so much that we could have you speak about because you have such a depth of knowledge and your own personal experiences around refineries and living in Wilmington as you do and all that you have witnessed in your time as a longstanding community advocate and organizer around Wilmington and the harbor area. You were also the survivor of an oil refinery explosion in Wilmington, and I was wondering if you could share why that incident inspired a lifetime of activism. Was that the main catalyst for you?
Actually, it was one of the most, traumatic things that you can encounter in your life, and it's something that you will never forget. In my case, what happened is that I was 17 years old living in Wilmington, and across the street actually is the city of Carson. Mm-hmm. And across the street was Fletcher Oil Refinery. Mm-hmm. Now, when people live across the street from an oil refinery or a chemical facility, our sense of awareness and danger is a little bit different than if you live 2-3 blocks away. People that live 2-3 blocks away think they're safe.
Right.
But when we live actually across the street, it's a danger that's 24/7. Mm-hmm. You recognize it and you don't take any chances. If you see something that's not normal or mm-hmm. of that nature, suspicious, you will take an action. You will do something about it. And what happened is that it was a weekday. It was approximately like 5 p.m. in the evening. Mm-hmm. Mom had just yelled at us, "Hey, kids, it's time to have dinner." Mm-hmm. So we're like in the back den coming running down the hallway. And all of a sudden, there was a large explosion. And it just knocked us down to our feet.
Literally.
All of us are on the floor. And we all get up. And it's obvious. We know what it is.
Right.
It's across the street. It's a mm-hmm. refinery. So instead of dinner, Mom and Dad yell, "Hurry up. Let's get inside the car. We're going to leave. We're going to drive down to Auntie's house, which is about 7-8 blocks away." Mm-hmm. So let's go grab Grandma next door. So we go next door, grab Grandma. We get mm-hmm. her. We start getting into the station wagon. And what had happened is that one of those big round fuel tanks that you see, that is what exploded.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, what happened as we were getting into the car, the station wagon, a second one exploded.
Oh.
So then we all had to run back. Now, I'm 17 years old. Mm-hmm. I had five younger siblings under me, plus Mom and Dad. My mother was already 7 months pregnant also
oh,
at that
gosh.
Time.
Oh,
so we go running back in the house. Mm-hmm. So then, okay, what are we going to do? Okay, well, when it's a main boulevard where we live, mm-hmm. it's 5 o'clock then in the evening, so people are getting out of work.
Right.
There's a shopping center across the street, kitty corner. There's a little industrial park a little bit mm-hmm. north of it. Mm-hmm. To the right and south is a middle school.
Oh,
so there's students there practicing, playing, softball, football, soccer, whatever, after school mm-hmm. hours. And so we said, okay, well, we can't leave now because mm-hmm. cars have crashed into each other. People
oh,
are screaming.
Sure.
There's flames all over the place. It's okay, we're all going to hold hands and we're going to run to the corner. We're like in the middle of the block. Mm-hmm. We'll run to the corner as fast as we can. Then we'll continue walking to Auntie's house. Well, soon as we all got outside, had grandma, we're all holding hands, a third one exploded.
Oh, I can't believe it. What year was this?
This is about 1967.
Okay.
Okay. And so this one, when we're talking about when you see TV, you see like the hydrogen bomb explosion, like in wars and stuff of that nature, that is what we saw.
Mm.
But this one now, the third one was actually larger. And the balls of flame were now coming over our heads, over our house, going south.
Oh my
goodness. My dad yells at me and calls me by my Mexican nickname.
Uh-huh.
My name is Jesse, but all Jessies in Jesus got a nickname, Chewy.
Oh, Chewy, yes.
Okay. So, Chewy, you help your brothers and sister over the back wall, block wall fence. Meanwhile, I'll help grandma over the house, over the fence, and help mom get over the fence, and then we'll all get together. So, you know, I'm tossing brothers and sisters.
Oh,
we're talking about a 5-foot wall.
Terrifying,
you know?
Terrifying.
And then I jump over the fence, and then I'm getting ready to run. So just as I'm getting ready to do the 100-mile-per-hour dash out of there, I hear a voice. And it says, boy, boy, please turn around. So I turn around and look back, and there's a blonde woman holding a baby.
Oh, my
God. So,
goodness.
You know, 7-8-month-old baby. Mm. The baby blanket's burned. The baby's face is burned.
Oh, no.
You know, and she says, please, please, save my baby. She literally throws the baby over the wall for me to catch like a football.
Oh,
and then
God.
I catch the baby and look at her. She says, run as fast as you can and save my baby's life.
And she couldn't go over the fence.
Well, she could, but you know.
Right. It was just, that's what happened.
When everything's
on
fire.
It was just like chaotic.
And you got a ball of flame over your head.
Yes.
It's just burning you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just kept on running with the baby because like the flames were already going like the second block, third block.
It's like hard to even conceive of. It's like a Hollywood action
and then
movie. You know?
It's hard to breathe. You can't breathe because the air is so hot. Your lungs are burning from the inside. Your nostrils are burning. And then I'm terrified. I'm only 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm carrying a baby. I don't even know who the baby is.
Right.
You know? And then, you know, in Wilmington, there is no hospital. There are clinics, so I'm running and running, and then all of a sudden I stop, you know, and okay, you know, where's a clinic? I got to think, okay, I got to get back to the main street. And then I found a clinic. I walked in the clinic, and I says, well, the baby was burned. Yes, we have people running in right now that are all burned.
And so, you also were burned, weren't you, and your family?
Well,
I understand.
There's 8 members of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was burned from first degree up to third degree. My grandmother was burned third degree because she was outside gardening in front at the time. So her neck, shoulders, and right arm were burned with third degree burns. The rest of us were pretty much first degree, so it wasn't too bad. But over 200 people were burned and injured as a result of that. And then 2 workers were killed at the time.
So what kind of compensation was given? I mean, what happened in the post of that happened? I mean, was there any accountability? But I mean, how did it happen? Who's responsible?
Well, this is a typical, you know, Mexican community, you know, although we're Mexican-American in our family's case, we don't know too much about things of that nature. But what happened is that an attorney law firm was basically going door to door contacting families. And so they asked us if we want to be part of a lawsuit.
Class action.
And they were out of Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a cash settlement.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when the dust settled, you know, we got was so small.
Whoa.
And what we heard that they made was so different. And then even what they settled on, you know, couldn't compensate you.
No.
For our memory and the terror you actually went through.
Yeah, just the trauma. And then you continue to live there and you never know if you'll be safe, you know, in the future.
Well, as a result of that explosion, and they had numerous other types of violations, the South Coast Air Quality Management District eventually pulled and took away their permit, and they were closed down.
Okay. And so how long was it before they were closed down?
And I would say maybe 4 or 5 years.
So just to even think that they would still be able to operate that many years after such a major...
But then you have to also realize in Wilmington, there are 3 refineries. And then in Carson, BP Arco bordered Wilmington. So literally there was 4 refineries.
Yeah.
Every refinery has exploded a minimum of 1 time.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me, from that time to now, you know, like when they talk about the expansion of the Tesoro refinery or the merger that happened with the Tesoro refinery, you know, and then the AQMD saying that, oh, well, this will be an upgrade from the 1920s era refinery. I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, in my case, I'm a very unique individual. You know, I'm experiencing a life-threatening explosion that terrorized us and traumatized all my family, and all of our neighbors were also injured. And so that was the first thing in my evolution as to awaken to the world of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and in high school, you know, I'm learning you know, things about life.
That's a little the hard
bit,
way.
It's a little bit more mature thing. So I wasn't like so much a hardcore activist.
Right.
But what happened is that two more things happened about that time in high school. Mm. You know, at that time, it was the 60s. They had the war and poverty thing going on.
Yes.
They established teen centers throughout L.A. County. I was participating with one of the kids and students going to one of the teen centers in Wilmington. And they had summer jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to, you know, put in my application, and about 50, 60 kids, my friends, all of us got hired.
Uh-huh.
But in those times, it's different like today. In those times, you were cleaning weeds,
uh-huh.
cleaning streets,
uh-huh.
that type of
right.
thing.
Yes.
Today, you work in a mayor's office, city mm-hmm. council's mm-hmm. office, a corporation, but in those days, it wasn't. And so it was payday, like, you know, 2-3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
So we get our paycheck, I open up our paycheck, and I look at it, and I go, wait a minute, there's something wrong, because we worked 2 weeks, 40 hours each
mm-hmm.
week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had 32 hours for each week.
Uh-oh.
And I go, well, wait a minute. You know, we only got paid 32 hours. And then all the other kids saying, you're right, Jesse. You know, look it, they cheated us.
Uh-huh.
So then the supervisor says, what's wrong, Jesse? Well, you know, we looked at our paycheck and it's short.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me go talk to the boss inside the office. He goes in the office and he says, well, you know, the summer youth program job manager wants to talk with you. So, okay, I walk in there. And he says, well, Jesse, you know, I heard that you're complaining about your check. And I go, well, yes, I'm complaining, but there's a good reason for it.
Right. He says, rightfully so.
You kids don't understand how difficult it is for us adults and organizations and nonprofit groups like us to find summer youth jobs. And we can't have you getting all the other kids upset, you know. So, you know, today's your last day.
Oh, so they let you go.
So
wow.
They fired me.
So you are learning about the world the hard way.
And then I go home. My mom's all excited because I told her my first paycheck, you know, when I catch a check, I want to give you half the money. That
mm-hmm,
way
mm-hmm.
it helps with the family because we had a big family and we're
right.
poor. And she says, well, Monday I'm going to make you your favorite lunch. What do you want? And I says, well, I got fired, so, you know, you don't need to make me lunch. And then that's when the yelling comes in. Well, what did you do? What did you say? La, 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 la.
Uh-huh.
Well, go sit in the corner because your dad's going to come home from work pretty soon. So we had that rule, too. You got
right.
in trouble, you sit in the corner. And then I'm the oldest one. So
mm-hmm.
everyone else is younger. So they're all looking at me like, what's going on? What's going
right.
on? You know, because I'm training my parents how to be a parent, too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that works that way a lot.
So dad comes in. He sees me. He says, okay, well, let me take a shower and then we'll talk outside. So I explained to him what happened. He says, oh, okay, hey, I'll tell your mom. It's not your fault. I agree with you. You know, you did nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then something great happened a week later.
Mm-hmm.
The Teen Post Center director calls me up and says, Jesse, do you like UCLA? Well, yeah. You know, would you like to go to UCLA one day? And I go, well, yeah. You know, like
uh-huh.
to stay in the dormitories and
mm-hmm.
go to school and learn stuff. I have the perfect thing for you. This summer, the Teen Post Incorporated in LA is sponsoring a student leadership program. Where you're going to live on campus four
mm-hmm.
or 5 weeks
mm-hmm.
in the dorms. You get a card. You get to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's a student leadership program. You get in there. You'll be watching movies and
mm-hmm.
listen to speakers. And I go, oh, would you like to do that? Great. Yes. Well, come over here. Pick up the form. Have mom and dad sign it. And then you leave next week.
Wow.
And so then, you know, Pat picks me up, drops me up at UCLA. And it turns out it's not the normal student leadership program. You know, there's like 50 of us kids there. And I don't think, actually, I think it was less, maybe 30 of us all boys there. And the guy begins to speak. My name is so-and-so. You're attending a student leadership program. And it's sort of a different kind of a program that you would be accustomed to in that, you know, it's designed for young adults who have gotten in trouble or leading towards being in trouble. And we're trying to prevent you into going into drugs and gangs and
uh-huh.
being violent, la, 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 la. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, what did I get myself into here? And he says, but, you know, here's the good news. You're teachers and instructors. This is not a student council type
mm-hmm.
leadership program. There are no student council presidents or student council members here. And so I'm going to take the time and let each one of your 7 or 8 instructors introduce themselves. Well, my name is so-and-so, and, you know, I belong to Mecha.
Mm-hmm.
My name is so-and-so. I'm a member of the Black Panthers.
Oh, listen.
My name is so-and-so. I'm a member of SNCC.
Huh.
My name is so-and-so. I am with the Raza Unida Party. My name is so-and-so. I'm with the Brown Berets.
Wow.
My name is so-and-so. I'm with AIM, the American Indian Movement. My name is so-and-so. I'm with, you know, NOW, National Organization for Women and ACLU.
So you were born to do that. You were born to be a community organizer. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So as a result of that introduction, you can imagine I was going through the left of center student leadership program. And this is what position me and frame my mind for the future as to, you know, what was the real world all about.
And where you could participate.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EcoJustice Radio in KPFK Los Angeles. Carrie Kim is speaking with Jesse Marquez, the Executive Director of Coalition for a Safe Environment.
Could you tell us, you have done so much work around public advocacy and safety and the dangers of living near an oil refinery, and I believe we have 13, right, in Southern California. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more in depth about some of the deadly chemicals that most people don't know about. And like, as you said, if you don't live next to a refinery, you kind of just you drive by it, but you really don't have the threat as imminent as it is for a lot of the neighborhoods here. Could you speak about that?
Okay. First, let's clarify that there are different kinds of dangers. Mm-hmm. So what I experienced was an explosion due to a gas leak.
Okay.
And when the workers started the truck, the ignition ignited the gas. So that's one type of a public safety danger that is major. The other type is that refineries use chemicals in their manufacturing process.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are explosive as well, and many of them are danger to public health.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we discovered about 4 years ago is that when the ExxonMobil refinery exploded in Torrance, a piece of equipment did not have safeguards in it. There was no a gas leak detector. There was no pressure gauge detector. And so when gases came from the outside into the electrostatic precipitator, it caused it to explode. But here's what we learned from that explosion. A 15,000 piece of metal came within about a foot of hitting this gas tank, this chemical tank. And that chemical tank has a chemical called hydrogen fluoride, or hydrofluoric acid, which I had no clue what it was about.
Deadly stuff.
Well, it turns out it's one of the most deadly chemicals. If that tank was to rupture and that chemical comes out, it forms a dense toxic cloud. It kills everybody instantly within 2 miles.
And those two refineries still have it in use, right?
And so that's what we learned from the ExxonMobil. What turns out during the public hearings, we find out that the Valero refinery in Wilmington also has that chemical.
And they still do to this day, right?
And both of them are still using the chemicals today.
Yeah.
They are not banned. Now, we have tried through the public process, through legislation and through procedures to try to get the ban.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens, here's what reality about government agencies, especially the regulatory ones. They negotiate.
Sure.
They compromise with these industries, with these companies,
and
they do not adopt the most stringent public safety standards.
They look the other way.
Yes.
They get paid to look the other way. You know, can you tell us, well, we know that this is part of the problem in our country, and we've witnessed this many times with all the failed EIRs and sort of the corporate dominance in this country nowadays. But I'm wondering if you could tell us some of the upsides of one of the things you were saying is about the new 2019 petroleum industry regulations, and it sounded like it was maybe something positive in a positive direction as far as the monitoring that's coming.
Yes.
So if you could speak to some of that new monitoring that will be in effect as a result.
So I first mentioned that the early days of learning to be an activist in 2001 is when I actually created my organization, the Coalition for a Safe Environment. And then that's when we began to do extensive research into port operations, freight transportation, or refineries, energy industry. And that's when we started learning about the public dangers. But we also realized that, you know, nothing would change if we didn't become an active participant.
Sure.
And what I mean by that is that all the time government regulatory agencies hold public hearings and public meetings because refineries and industries, ports, projects are always expanding.
Sure.
So under environmental laws, in California's case, it's called CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act law. Every major project over $1 million, they must prepare an environmental impact report, an EIR, that's going to evaluate all the impacts. So we're talking about air quality, water quality, land, you know, biological, wildlife, public health, and public transportation. So that's when we began to learn how to participate, review these documents, and then it's
and
a game.
And contest them
and
because
contest
they're so often flawed.
Well, they were significantly flawed. The original documents were only like 2,000, 3,000 pages. Mm-hmm. As a result of the last 15 years in our advocacy and coordinating with other organizations, they are now 10,000-page documents.
Yeah, and that needs to be. And that still probably doesn't cover everything.
And they still do not cover everything. So now what we have to do is we divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. Some of us are specialized in areas, like me in air quality, others in water. So they will review those chapters and those sections. And it's a game, finding out, what did they leave out?
Sure.
What did they misrepresent?
Mm-hmm.
What did they fail to do? And that's where I come in to that picture. I now prepare, like in the case of the Port of L.A., their environmental report for one project, the BNSF Railroad Intermodal Facility.
Mm-hmm.
I prepared a 50-page public comment as to everything was wrong, but delivered 5,000 pages in supporting documentation.
That's amazing.
Well, the same thing happens with refineries. They are going through their public review process.
Mm-hmm.
So like in Tesoro, the Wilmington Tesoro oil refinery merged with the Carson BP Arco, and now it is the largest oil refinery
on
the West Coast.
Yeah. So, you know, tell us about the air quality, you know, monitoring system, because, you know, when they did that merger and when they approved that, the city of Carson, you know, I read that the data was really taken from Long Beach, not Carson. And I'm just wondering what reliable data is out there for people to review and where should they go to find out about reliable air quality data?
Well, that was some of the research we conducted and began to realize that all refineries do some monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
They are required to report their annual emissions of all chemicals. So typically they'll have 60, 70 chemicals that they use, and they report it on the average, what it is that they release every year. Then the South Coast Air Quality Management District, which has jurisdiction over all LA County, Orange County, part of Ventura, part of San Bernardino, and Riverside, they have their monitoring stations that are part of a government statewide and U.S.-wide network. Well, the closest one to the harbor is in North Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have one
next
to an oil refinery.
Sure.
They don't have one next to the Port of L.A. or Port of Long Beach. They don't have one next to a freeway.
Now, for sure, you've probably made demands for that.
Well, what happened is that as we began to learn about examining the data, we found flaws in the data. Like we knew in 2007, 2009, there was like a major explosion where what happened is that the DWP, Department of Water Power in Los Angeles, workers cut a cable and the power went out. So now the three oil refineries in Wilmington that are tied into it all began to flare. What that means is that, you know, they're going into emergency failure mode. They have to, chemicals that are being processed, they can't necessarily stop them because pumps are pumping them, which would cause more explosions. So what happens, they have to release it and burn the gases. Okay. So that's
get released in the atmosphere.
So then we began to examine that data. So I looked at a five-year, you know, report, and it didn't show any change for that year. Then I go,
How is that possible? Yeah.
How is that possible? And then we began to examine the data. And then we began to realize, wait a minute, they're not examining everything. Everything does not add up. And that we should have some of our community-based monitoring.
Yeah.
So in 2014, our organization got a grant from two government agencies, the California Air Resources Board and Department of Toxic Substances, to establish our
monitoring
own monitoring system. So we actually talked to some of our members, and we actually it was a Samoan family that allowed us to put it on top of the roof of their house on the other side of the fence from the ConocoPhillips oil refinery.
And what did you find?
And then we learned that, you know, yes, they were exceeding different categories of chemicals. But then we also realized that is the same circumstances the agency are in. But then they're not reducing the
And they're
chemicals.
Not being enforced. Yeah, they're not the regulations that they have to abide by aren't being enforced.
So then we're also, like I said, we're still growing. We're always evolving. And we found out that the U.S. EPA in Washington, D.C. had a requirement under the Clean Act that every 4 or 5 years, they would reassess all the permits, all the reporting requirements that were being done and have to be updating them. And we discovered with Earth Justice, one of the environmental law firms, that they had not been updated in 13 years.
Oh my God.
See, and then it would take 2 more years to do the process. So we sued EPA.
And did you win?
And we actually, we won.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And what the settlement was is that every refinery would now have to have fence line monitoring
Right there on their
property.
On the premises.
And now this had never been happened before and never exists anywhere else on the
world. It's amazing that you got that to be enacted, really. you know, that advocacy. But that, you know, you were trained at the right time by the right people. You know, I wanted to see if you could talk about, I know we're getting close toward the end of our time together, but I wanted to see if you could share a little bit about particulate matter. I was watching a video and you were talking about even people don't realize the real impact of diesel exhaust. And I know all of us feel particulate matter increasing in LA. You can't be walking around here and not feel the difference in our lungs and the burning in our eyes and the throat that's changed.
In the process of learning, we had to also learn that different chemicals have different public health effects. You mentioned PM. That is the black exhaust, the smoke that we see coming out of trains and ships and things of that nature. And it causes respiratory diseases. So your asthma, your lung cancer, those type of
COPD.
Things, COPD, are what causes those. On the other side of the table are what they call your VOCs, volatile organic compounds. Those are like the gas smell, like at a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Those cause blood diseases. Mm-hmm. So that's your leukemia, your lymphoma.
Your cancers.
And those type of cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've learned from that. And therefore, our advocacy is focused on reducing those, which is why, you know, regulations, we monitor all regulations. We do public comments.
Mm-hmm.
We have teamed up with USC and other universities to be able to look at research so that we can make our claim
mm-hmm.
with evidence and scientific evidence and information that backs up our claims. So that the good news, yes, the environment is cleaning up and it is getting better,
mm-hmm.
but also we understand that things are also expanding.
Right, like so, the port and it still continues. I mean, it's incredible to drive by the port and just see that, what a massive area it is. And a lot of people don't consider, you know, talk about the transportation corridors and international ports, just the impact of that. You know, on our air quality. And
because we learn, you know, from these processes and we're faced with many different dangers, we got a grant from the Harvard Community Benefit Foundation last year
mm-hmm.
to write the first Wilmington Community Emergency Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what makes our plan different? We are not a city. We are not a county. We're not a federal government emergency response agency. But what happens when a nonprofit organization takes that on? What happens when the author has been a survivor of a victim of a real explosion? Well, that's what we've done. We have written, and we reviewed over 40 plans worldwide and have actually prepared the best plan. When I read over 40 different plans, not one was a 9 or 10.
Wow.
So we're talking City of LA, City of Long Beach, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is a 10.
Where can people obtain a copy of this preparedness plan?
Well, what's happening right now, it's going to be approved by the Harbor Community Benefit Foundation, hopefully this month,
mm-hmm.
so that next month in November, I'll be able to release it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have published copies.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also have it on our website. And right now we're redesigning it, but it'll be www.cfase.org.
Can you repeat that one more time?
CFASE.org.
You know, I am.
And that's Coalition for a Safe
Environment.
So CFASE.org.
Is that the best place for listeners to stay in contact with you, Jesse, and to learn more about the advocacy work you are doing?
They can do that. I can also give out my phone number if someone wants to follow up with a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're totally open and available to that. It's area code 310-590-0177. That's 310-590-0177.
And you're also on Facebook, right? The Coalition for a Safe Environment.
Yes, we're on
Facebook as well. You know, in closing, I was wondering if you could just say, you know, what words of inspiration do you have for listeners? Because it is quite a bleak world. On the one hand, we see sort of both things happening at the same time where people are really galvanizing and more communities are rising up for what is right and for environmental justice, for the just planetary preservation. And I'm wondering what words you might share to inspire listeners, given everything that you've come through in your own life and where you are.
Thank you. The most inspirational, I think, statement I can say is that everyone can make a contribution. We've all experienced negative things, bad things, mishap things. We see things on TV. We just had the shootout
mm-hmm.
there it's in high school, which is tragic. It's terrifying. But do something. Take the time. Attend your students, parent meeting, a public hearing at a library, a public meeting in a basketball gym at a public mm-hmm. park. And even though you might think you don't know anything, you will always learn something. you will always be able to contribute something. And then what's happened in the last 15 years, there are now over 100 environmental justice organizations throughout California.
Yeah.
So no matter what your interest is, if you want to save the whales, hug a tree, you know.
Yeah, there's someone your people are out there.
There's somebody there that you can team up with. And if you contact any organization, we network throughout the state,
Absolutely.
Throughout the United States, and even throughout the world. So we can team you up with the right partner.
Yeah, well, you're a prime example of that because you have affected so much change. I mean, even just with the fence line monitoring that we didn't have before, it's an imperative.
And if you're a student and an adult and you want to go into an internship program, you can team up with us.
Oh, well, there you go.
So you can learn to be a photographer, a videographer. Mm-hmm. You can learn how to do chemical samples. Not everyone's going to be a PhD scientist, and you can be one of our technicians because now we're setting up now a weather station tomorrow alongside our air quality monitoring equipment. So you could be a technician in how to operate the equipment.
Listeners, reach out to Jesse Marquez and Coalition for a Safe Environment and definitely take his words to heart about participating. Many thanks for coming on the show, Jesse. We are so grateful for your work to educate and support and preserve the planet and help our children have a healthy, safe environment to inhabit.
And thank you so much for the invitation. It's an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you to our guest, Jesse Marquez, Executive Director of the Coalition for Safe Environment, and to our listeners for joining us. All the resources mentioned today will be available at SoCal350.org. You have been listening to EcoJustice Radio, recorded at the KPFK Los Angeles studio, a project of SoCal 350. The show can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and at SoCal350.org. Created by Mark and JP Morris, executive producer Jack Eit, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Carrie Kim, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.